Because it's been a year since the genocide started. The Palestinians have been fighting for their freedom. I'm Palestinian myself. We have the right to be free like any other nation, like America, France, England, Germany, Turkey. We have that right. We tried to the UN, it didn't work. We tried boycotting, it didn't work. We tried non-violence, it didn't work. So there's only one way left, the violent way, the resistance way. If you want to condemn October 7, you have to condemn the American Revolution. You have to condemn the French Revolution against the Germans when they occupied France. You have to condemn every freedom, all the freedom fighters in history that fought for their freedom. What did Thomas Jefferson say? Give me liberty or give me death. Today, the Palestinians are saying, give us freedom and liberty or death. We are done talking. We are done negotiating with our captors and the terrorists that rule Palestine. So we're going to keep fighting until we get our freedom. Now, my message is to my people in America, my countrymen. The reason why people in North Carolina cannot get help is because of Israel. The reason why people in Hawaii cannot get help is because of Israel. The reason why people in Florida cannot get help is because of Israel. The reason why you live paycheck to paycheck and inflation is high up in the sky is because of Israel. They're giving billions, billions to Israel, billions. But nothing for you. You know why? Because our Congress and our President and our Supreme Court are strippers and hookers for Israel.
What is your immediate solution?
Immediate solution? We need to run for Congress and lobbying in America. I don't care if you're Israel, Saudi Arabia, Ukraine, Egypt. You're not allowed to buy our government. Our government is for America only. America first. That's number one. Number two, cut the aid to Israel. Tell Israel they don't stop what they're doing. No more aid. No more money. We pay for Israel, so we're their daddy. That's how it's supposed to be. Not the other way around. And the Palestinians and Lebanese have to keep fighting until we get freedom. Either we get a two-state solution, 1967 borders, East Jerusalem's our capital, or we break Israel into pieces. That's the only way.
Okay, Sandy Rios with you. Well, that happened in New York City on the anniversary of October the 7th, which is, if you're listening, just in my time, it was yesterday. But of course, when you listen, I'm not sure. But let's just say that in that attack by Hamas into that music festival in the north of Israel, hundreds were killed, dragged off, women raped, children, babies put in ovens, people beheaded, the horrors, women raped, the horrors of that day, I think many people are sheltered from. And of course, we still have American hostages held by Hamas. I don't know how many, I think maybe four, I'm not sure. But there are hostages still being held, and some were released recently, and they were held in the most inhumane conditions you can imagine. You know, not able to stand up, not able to breathe, very little food. It's a nightmare. Okay, so now we have this American in New York City with his other fellow Americans shouting, talking about breaking Israel into pieces. When have we ever allowed American citizens to call for the death of other citizens? We call that the serious threat. People get arrested for doing that. And yet, Islamists have so populated our country, they've come in legally and illegally. It started with the Bush administration, was accelerated by the Obama administration. And the problem is that the ideology of Sharia law is absolutely incompatible with American law and constitution. And we've not required anyone to accept those principles. The understanding of immigration in days of old was that they would come here to become Americans, to embrace our constitution, to embrace our laws. And so we have caused this rift, this chasm, and it is absolutely incompatible. We can't the Jewish nation has been America's friend for decades, and we should not have people among us allowed to even, you know, to be intent upon destroying them and destroying Americans who hold that view. Look at people, how they are mistreated at these rallies when they don't support Hamas. Look how colleges and universities are buildings taken over. It's a violent mob, just seething, you know, to really act out. They did act out in Washington, D.C. They burned the American flag. This is what is among us. And so October the 7th was a terrible event. And Israel is, of course, preparing for something. To strike Iran, we don't really know what. As I speak, it hasn't happened yet, but they are good at their word. They do what they say they're going to do, so we all wait to see exactly how Israel's going to respond to the barrage of rockets that came into Israel just a few days ago. So stay tuned for that. Today we're going to be talking actually to Gary Hamrick. Gary is one of my favorite pastors. I listen to him all the time, and he is a masterful teacher of the end times, of Israel and its relationship with God's work toward the end, you know, that Israel is central, our relationship to Israel. We meaning Christians, are grafted into the same tree, same God. And so I'm going to talk to Gary about that a bit, and I hope that you'll stay tuned. But first, when I think about the things that Hamas has done to the Israelis, it's savage. It's incomprehensible for us. It's the opposite of valuing life. In fact, the Muslim Brotherhood, their motto, I don't know if it's still their motto, I guess it is, we love death more than they, meaning us, more than they love life. We love death more than they love life. And certainly, I think in our culture, many people have embraced that, even if they're not saying it. The pro-abortion forces really do love death more than they love life, certainly not their lives. They're pretty, you know, territorial about their own lives, but not so much babies. And so there's really one viable solution, as far as I'm concerned right now, the most effective, and that is supporting Preborn, who provides ultrasounds for moms who are confused. They don't think they want to keep the baby. They don't think that they can. Ultrasounds help them to see their baby and see reality, really, that there is a life growing in them, and most women, the majority, more than a majority, choose to keep their baby once they see it. And so that's why I tell you every time we talk that Preborn is just a few dollars, like $28 for one ultrasound just to provide the service. And so it's just affordable for all of us to help them. And many of you have so generously. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and help save a mom and her baby's life. Well, you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. And by the way, you're listening to Sandy Rios. We love hearing from you. Many of you have been leaving phone messages. I've been listening to them. You can call us at 662-821-2040. You can send us an email at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. You can find us on the social media platforms, pretty much all of them. I do most of my interactive stuff on Twitter, and my handle, as they call it, is @SandyRiosTweet. Now, you may not be familiar with Twitter, but I'm telling you that's a really great source of information right now. So @SandyRiosTweet is my handle there. You can listen to the podcast on any podcast platform, whatever your favorite is. You can go to afr.net and listen. That's our home base. And you can go to sandyrios.com and listen as well. Well, all right. You're in for a treat. Gary Hamrick will be joining us today, and we'll be talking about things related to Israel. So stay tuned for this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something. All right, we're here at the Pray Vote Stand Radio Row at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C. I think this might be, I don't know, my 19th year to be at, that's, you know I look much younger, but Gary Hamrick, don't laugh at that.
I agree.
Pastor Gary Hamrick is my first guest, and what a privilege.
Thank you.
Gary, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Sandy. It's good to be with you.
All right, I have to, you know, people, because you do have I just should say. You're the senior pastor of Cornerstone Chapel. I should not take for granted that people know that. And since we last spoke a year ago, I've been listening to you so faithfully. I know people say that to you, but really God's hand is on your ministry and on your. He's giving you wisdom beyond measure.
Thank you.
And you're inspiring millions at this very difficult time.
Thank you.
I just wanted to know how that, look, being in some kind of work that where God has to inspire and help me, and there have been times when I know people give me tremendous affirmation, and that's a wonderful thing. But does it make you worry a little bit? Do you sort of tremble under the pressure of being used by God that way?
I mean, I heard Spurgeon. Well, I didn't hear him. I read that Spurgeon once said, "If your knees are not knocking when you get in the pulpit, you should probably stop doing that," or some kind of paraphrase to that. To that nature. So, yeah, I've always had a sense of awe and reverence. God's calling is to be taken seriously, and so it always has attached to it a little bit of trepidation,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, you're watching me. You saw that with me before we started here. But all right, let's talk about what's happening in the world, because heavens, you know, Gary, I find myself, I'm watching the news, and I've always followed all of it, the world, what's going on in the world, Europe, Israel, yeah. Africa, wherever, you know, and the United States. And yeah. This is an overwhelming time. And I just sense, I feel like that groaning for his coming. Like, I feel like he's coming. Our things are unfolding. My question to you is, how can we be sure that the things that we're seeing really are the things prophesied? Because in times past, people thought the end was near. They thought Hitler was the Antichrist and all, fill in
exactly.
the blanks. So people have had problems before. There was the Holocaust. There's been famines, genocides.
Yeah.
How do we know that now is really and truly a biblical prophecy being fulfilled?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we can't always know every detail that we see, whether or not that relates to prophecy in the Bible or not. I think the overall message is we have to always be ready for the imminent return of Jesus at any time. And when we see these kind of birth pangs that Jesus referred to, like in Matthew chapter 24, I think we can say for certain that we're living in a time that these things are starting to come together. But, you know, I've always been cautious to say to people, like, don't put all your eggs in a basket. You see Iran lobbing rockets at Israel. Could this be Ezekiel 37? It could be, but don't be hanging everything on that as the end times, because we don't know for certain. So always be ready, but don't be looking at every single thing as if, oh, this is it. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, we know in part. When we get to be with the Lord, then we will know fully as we are fully known. So we just kind of keep living our lives with one eye on the Bible, one eye on the end time events and the things in our culture, and then saying to ourselves, okay, Lord, this seems to be lining up, but the bottom line is I want to be ready for your imminent return, whenever that is.
I'm so glad you said that, because that's been such a huge mistake. I think you may have lived during some of the decades I was alive, where there was so much prophecy and everybody was sure about, this is this and this is that. People set dates and...
Oh, Y2K, remember Y2K? It's going to be the end of the world. And, and it turned out not to be. And so people can't be living with that kind of hypersensitivity, but they should still be living with the awareness of his imminent return.
Look, I've discussed Israel. A lot of my contacts in that area are not believers, because I have a lot of friends that are still on the inside of whatever, and so I talk to them a lot, and I have covered it. I covered it. My listeners have heard. I talked about that the Netanyahu speech, and then the attack on Nasrallah, and all this. That story is just incredible. But I've told the story already, so that story. But it keeps happening.
Yeah, it does.
But what makes us think that particular thing, those particular happenings are biblical? How do we know? What's in Scripture that would indicate?
Well, up until 1935, Iran was called Persia. And Persia is mentioned in the Bible. In Ezekiel 37, it talks about how Persia forms an alliance with Gog, which is a word that means prince or czar, and Magog is the region of the ancient Scythians, which is Russia. So we do know from Ezekiel 37 that Iran and Russia will make an alliance against Israel. Some of that's happening right now.
Right.
I mean, Russia is helping with Iran's nuclear capabilities. And so when you do see, okay, Iran is taking action here against Israel, we should perk up. We should, again, realize, okay, this could be very biblical. And so it should motivate Christians to be ready. Non-Christians, wow, I hope it draws them to realize things are happening. Why is it that Christians seem to have a peace about this stuff in the midst of the chaos? Oh, because we know how the rest of the book ends, right? So, you know, hopefully it will draw non-Christians to a curiosity about faith. But for Christians, we should just be comforted. Okay, the Bible talks about these things. We can't be alarmed. We have to keep looking up. Our redemption draws near.
I will say this. When I was a kid growing up, there wasn't... politicians didn't talk about their faith much. Just they in a prayer or they'd quote something, but they didn't talk about their personal faith. Jimmy Carter,
it's Sunday school teacher.
We could have done without that, but anyway, the fruits of that were not very impressive.
Yeah.
So I've worked in D.C. When I was there as president of Concerned Women for America, I would just say, Gary, even Christian groups, we didn't even start our meetings with prayer.
Yeah.
There wasn't much fervor. It was perfunctory. We all understand, yeah, we're Christians. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's an understanding, but we're not really alive.
Yeah.
And now, having my toes still here in D.C., I see such a change now in non-believers.
Yeah.
People that normally would not have tolerated my evangelical blathering, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and constant mm-hmm. mentions. Are really open
mm-hmm.
because they see how everything's coming unwired.
Yeah.
And they're open to talking about it. That was what convinces me.
Yeah, and that's the
something's
encouraging.
Something's different.
Yeah, that's the encouraging thing. I think you're referring to, you know, I remember the time of the moral majority, the 80s. It was almost more cultural to be like a conservative moral person, right? But now, the lines have been drawn, Sandy. I mean, in our culture, you either have to stand for what is right or you're standing for what is wrong, for truth or for lies. And even though our culture tries to present all the lies as if it were true, and they would spoon feed it to us, they want us to believe it and to embrace it. As Christians, we know, okay, this is what truth is. We know it from Scripture. And so I think an unbelieving world respects that we are taking a stand for something, because when you take a stand for something, at least it shows you have some convictions about things. When you stand for nothing, anybody can stand for nothing. And so, to your point, I think a non-believing world looks at Christians today who are taking a firm stand on what is right. We don't have to be obnoxious about it. We're just standing for truth. And I think there's a measure of respect that a non-believing world has toward that.
And there's a power in it still.
Oh,
even if
sure.
you're being ridiculed, if you just stand there and say, no.
That's right.
No, it's not true.
That's right.
It's not true.
You're a person
I
of principles.
I won't bow the knee.
That's
knee. Yeah, so, but in regard to Israel, on the larger scope, the thing that really persuades me that this is different is from my Jewish friends who have strong Israeli ties. I just interviewed a good friend of mine last week, and she's talking about how, you know, the where the Wailing Wall is. They call they have a name for it now, but it's that square, that plaza.
Yeah.
100,000 people are gathering there, you know, praying and singing.
Yeah.
And they're not praying just, you know, folk songs, they're praying psalms and calling out to God. Formerly very secular Israel is waking up. And that's what I think is different in a profound way.
Yeah. There's nothing like rockets over your heads to wake you up spiritually. And so God will use this time, no doubt, to draw Jewish people to faith in Yeshua and Jesus. And that's my prayer.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah. Mine too. I find, because things are so chaotic here, there's some despair here, Gary.
Yeah.
The flood.
Yeah.
The hurricane, all the deaths, the political scene, the horrible things that we're hearing out of politicians, the proposals, the dread. And then when I look at Israel and see God's work, I find myself getting excited because I know it's the same. He's our God. That God over there doing that is the God that we serve.
Yeah. Yeah, and through natural disasters, we can see that's part of the end times, too. And so you have stuff happening here in terms of natural disasters. You have stuff happening in the Middle East in terms of war. And it should awaken us. It should make us realize, hey, we have to be ready. The Lord could come at any time.
Now, you have a lot of people, staffers, I know some of them, who go to your church or they're connected in Washington. What do you sense? Do you think God's at work? And I know the answer, but do you think God's at work among, I mean, are you see a stirring in them? Do they talk to you?
God is always at work, and I know you know that. I think what is happening in Washington is people are realizing the same kind of things we're talking about. Lines are being drawn. You can't be neutral anymore. Yeah, you have to take positions on things, and the culture has gone so crazy and so left that if you just stand still, it looks like you've gone right. You know what I'm saying? If you just stand where you are, like sometimes people say to me, you know, why have you become so politically conservative and politically right? And I'm like, listen, I'm just standing where I've stood for 33 years. I've been preaching out of the same Bible, but as the culture trends left, it makes people like us look like we've gone right. We haven't. We've just stood our ground on what is true and right and principles and godliness and righteousness. So I think the same kind of thing is happening in Washington, the political scene. When politicians have enough courage to say, this is what I stand for, then they might look ultra-conservative or ultra-right, but they're just standing for what is godly and principled and righteous. And so lines are being drawn in Washington. You can't be neutral anymore. It's very difficult. You know, when people say we're a very divided nation, yeah, and I know that grieves us, but at the same time, if you're standing for principles and righteousness, there will be division. By definition, truth is divisive. You can't be neutral. You're either right or you're wrong.
We have an odd situation. You just preached a phenomenal sermon on a Christian, I forgot the name of your sermon, but the Christian involvement in the political scene.
Yeah.
And you did that a few weeks ago, I think. Yeah. And it's gotten, I highly recommend that, by the way, to any of you listening, Gary Hamrick. And you just Google it and you can find it. It's easy.
Yeah, it's called Church Unite for the Soul of America. It's I preach an election sermon every 4 years around a presidential cycle. So that's what we titled it.
You know, I think it's getting complicated.
Yeah.
Because I'll speak personalities, because I do speak personalities.
Yeah.
I think, you know, President Trump has won the hearts of a lot of evangelicals for good reason, for the justices he appointed,
right,
and for the fact that, you know, he's a bawdy billionaire playboy, was, did a lot of stuff. I've forgiven him for that. I don't know anybody that he's not a believer.
Right.
I don't know why we judge him by believing standards, as though, you know, we were always the way God has made us now.
Yeah, well, I think evangelicals are looking for a candidate that looks like them. And if they can't find a person that they think is a solid Christian with solid biblical principles, then they don't know how to vote for someone who is less than that. The truth is, God has always used righteous and unrighteous people for his glory.
We're living proof of that, aren't we, Gary?
Of course.
And all the people in this hallway and everybody listening?
That's right.
For heaven's sake.
Yeah. We're not electing a pastor-in-chief. We are electing a commander-in-chief. And the standards are not the same.
All right. But I'm going to put this challenge out to you, because I have been talking about, but I'm really curious to know how you thread this needle.
Yeah.
Abortion, of course, has always been the driving force. I had an atheist approach me at another conference recently who'd been following me for years, and we had a long discussion about this. He asked me how I could support President Trump, who is no longer really, never probably, he's from, according to him, never really been pro-life. How can you support him now when the platform has moved away?
Yeah.
So a lot of people feel that way, Gary. A lot of evangelicals have fallen off because he's backed off from his strong positions of the past. So how do we thread that needle? Why would Christians then support him if he's not really strong or pro-life anymore?
Yeah, it's a good question, and you're right. He's not strongly pro-life as he once was. He's now talking about a 15-week ban that he would support. Well, the CDC's own number says that 95% of all abortions happen in the first 15 weeks. So when someone says, I'm for a 15-week ban, you're saying, I'm okay with 95% of abortions. And so he's not a strong pro-life candidate anymore. That said, sometimes you have to look at the incremental wins. And what I mean is, certainly when you look at what Kamala Harris stands for, she's for unrestricted abortions. So more babies will die under a Harris administration than under a Trump administration. Do I like to qualify that? No. I wish I could say unequivocally. Trump or whatever presidential candidate is so pro-life. We have a great advocate in the White House. He's not as pro-life as I want him to be, but less babies will die under a Trump administration than under Harris administration. And so sometimes you count your incremental wins and you say, okay, less babies would die under a Trump administration, under a Harris administration. But it's terrible. I wish I didn't have to say it that way. I wish I could say no babies would die, you know, versus this other candidate. But sometimes you have to take the incremental wins and hold your nose and go to the polls and vote.
I also think that because, you know, we used to have the luxury of assessing candidates with their pro-life stand. Of course, that came back to bite us because they all said they were pro-life and they really weren't. But in the early days, people finally declared, and then we voted for them. We didn't really know that much about how they stood on other things.
Yeah.
But the world was simpler.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we have a lot of issues, Gary, to me, that are pro-life.
Yeah.
I mean, I the sex trafficking thing, the way I just watched a documentary that hasn't been out yet about the babies that are being trafficked and used and just thrown away. That's happening under the Biden-Harris administration.
Yeah.
That's a pro-life issue.
It is a pro-life issue. There's 325,000 children who are missing now in the United States who have come over the border unaccounted for. That open border policy has led now to the abandonment of 325,000 children. So let's start with things like that and try to be pro-life to help preserve how precious children are. So there are various ways, to your point, there are various ways that we can be pro-life, looking out
for life. It's not just about babies. It never has been just about babies.
It's from the womb to the tomb. It's all of life.
Yes. Yeah, and I think about the whole transgender thing, the harm, the butchery.
Yeah.
Of children, and these recent murders, so many of them are happening by transgendered persons, at least three mass shootings.
Yeah.
So there are other things to consider now.
Yeah.
Because Kamala Harris and her running mate are just cheerleaders.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Minnesota, is a sanctuary state for transgender surgeries?
Yeah. And
because he just established it?
Yeah. And Tim Walz also signed a law in Minnesota that you don't have to save a baby who survives an abortion. So, I mean, doctors don't have to save a baby who survives an abortion. So the pro-life issue is multifaceted. And, again, I wish we had just a clear stance from a clear candidate. But now we have to look at who will help us to preserve more life than the other candidate. And that's what it comes down to now.
Let's talk about this. Is something of concern to everybody listening. I know it is. I find myself, I'll just confess to you, with things happening the way they are, I think about my husband and I are settled now. We have a nice home and, you know, we live in comfort. That wasn't always the case for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, well, are we going to lose our home? Are we going to lose all of our savings? Are we going to be hungry because I don't have a garden?
Mm.
So I find myself thinking about that. And then, of course, I rebuke myself because, I've pledged that I want to be ready to die for the gospel. So ready for the knock on the door by the FBI. I feel that way.
I know.
Yeah. So how should we be thinking about the dangers that we are seeing we feel the hot breath of it? How should we be thinking about that, Gary?
Yeah. I know people who are what they call the preppers, you know, and they've stored all their supplies in a separate home in Montana somewhere. And, you know, they're growing all their food. But the thing I say to preppers is, but if you're a believer and somebody shows up on your front porch hungry, what are you going to shoot them off your front porch? I mean, you're going to have to open up your heart and open up your home anyway. So we all have to just live day to day. My wife and I have talked about this too. It's like, you know, gardens and guns and, you know, what else do we need to gather? But the thing is, I'm going to trust that the Lord's going to return before it gets too ugly and he's going to rapture us and we're going to be out of here. But in the meantime, you're right. We have to be ready to lay down our lives. I can't believe we're even having to say this, but it is true. I met a couple last night here at Prevote Stand. FBI showed up at their house because she was a whistleblower about something. And they just showed up. They've been harassing them. The Justice Department has been weaponized. These are the times in which we are living, and Christians just have to remember the one that they're serving is the Lord. This is not too unlike first century. You know, when Christians were martyred in the first century, we might be seeing something like that, as unimaginable as that is.
Oh, I think so, too.
Yeah.
And I always say, we just have to hold whatever you have, just hold it lightly.
Yeah,
you got
exactly.
it today. You're enjoying it today. It might not be there tomorrow.
That's exactly
so just
right.
prepare your heart for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think of, I don't know if there's supplies. You tell me. When Jeremiah was seeing the destruction of, you know, God was telling him things are going to be destroyed. They were going to lose. And he's trying to tell the king. And I believe there's a passage where he says to the people, continue to plant your vineyards, go about your business, you know.
Yeah.
In other words, just live life daily.
Right. And Jesus said, occupy till I come. Like, we can't check out. We have to still do our jobs. In fact, the church at Thessalonica, Paul was calling them out because they had this desire to see the Lord return, and as a result, they stopped working, they weren't being productive, and he had to call them out about that. So the same thing could happen if we're not careful, that we just start to check out because, you know, Jesus is going to return, but we have to still stay engaged in our world.
Okay, one last thing, because I know you people want to talk to you, I'm going to let them have that privilege that I'm having. But I've kind of, I'm extrapolating what I think is going to happen to the church. I'm trying to tell even my own pastor, you're going to lose people, the middle class, I'm just speaking politically now, they're the going to be the target of this. They already are.
Yep.
They will be, their resources will be targeted because they are the ones that have the resources to fight back and the willingness. The rich have too much. They don't want to fight back and risk it. The middle class lays it on the line, and they're the ones that support the churches. They're going to be decimated. You're not going to have 50 pastors for a congregation of a thousand. You know, you're not even maybe have the church building anymore. You have to be understand what's coming. Is that a wrong perspective? Is that don't you think pastors should have a little more passion about what's happening?
Yeah, for sure. I think pastors should have a lot more passion for what is happening. And I have thought to myself, would our church building ever potentially need to be used as some kind of a refuge or safety center? You know, like in the Civil War, churches were turned into hospitals.
Right, that's
and
right.
It could be that we're going to see times like that. And so, you know, we like you said a moment ago, like we can't hold on too tightly to what we have, because who knows what lies ahead. So even for the church, the building, you know, we can't hold on to that too lightly. It's his, too firmly. It's his church, and we have to be ready to turn it into a hospital, a refuge center, a feeding center. Who knows what will lie ahead.
One point you made in a sermon recently was that we are the church. That we're the Church of Laodicea. No, the faithful church now, which does not include very many churches, I have to add, is which church in the lineup in Revelation?
Well, in Laodicea, you mean the lukewarm church.
The lukewarm church.
That's the one we're seeing right now.
Right.
Yeah. But we need to be the Church of Philadelphia.
Philadelphia
was the faithful church, the evangelistic church, and so hopefully we'll be in that stream.
Okay.
But churches have to choose that. You know, pastors have to choose which stream are they going to be in. Are they going to be in the Laodicean stream, which is just lukewarm? Or are they going to be the Church of Philadelphia, which is evangelistic and sharing the gospel? That is a choice, Sandy.
Well, it's messy right now everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just messy. Messy in the church, messy in the culture, messy in politics, messy in, you know, natural disasters. It's the confusion itself makes me sense that God is giving us a sense, Gary, that there's really nothing we can do.
Yeah,
it's like we
except
are helpless.
Him. Yep.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
And
but he takes all our messes, right?
Yes,
and he's
true.
The one who makes something good out of all the mess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and that is the point. So we long for him, and
Amen.
We kind of, Well, Gary Hamrick, again, a pastor, senior pastor at Cornerstone Chapel in Virginia, and you can hear him, you know, your team does a great job on social media.
Thank you.
So you can find his sermons and listen to his end times, his Israel sermons, his churches in these in the political era, whatever that title was. It's all good stuff. He's got a lot of wisdom. So, Gary, thank you.
Thanks, Sandy.
Thank you. God bless you.
Good being with you.
Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Kamala Harris is running for president. Did you know that her extreme radical stance for abortion is shared by her running mate? Tim Walz, actually, according to First Things, and I know that's true, Tim Walz supports the right to infanticide. In fact, you probably saw Shannon Bream's exchange with him just recently where he's defending the law he passed in Minnesota, which allowed for abortion, infanticide, really, abortion for all 9 months and allowing a baby to die. It's really shocking, but that's what it's all about. There are ways to give to preborn to stop this, because then the moms don't ask for an abortion. Therefore, you undercut their willingness to kill babies for all 9 months because the moms decide to keep them, and that's the beauty of preborn. If you can give $28 a month, that's great, but I want to ask you, if you have more resources, and some of you do, if you will consider a leadership gift to save more babies in a bigger way. It's a tax-deductible donation, and if you can give $5,000, it will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from The Morning Show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes that we have decided to re-engage with the daily news on Sandy Rios 24/7, as we once did in the mornings. I want to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. Just go to AFR.net or any podcast platform. You can also find Sandy Rios 24/7 at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, a fun thing. My book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now on Audible. Sometimes listening is better than reading. I recorded it in my own voice, which makes it even more personal for all of you who know me so well. Audible books are available on Amazon.com. God bless each and every one of you for your faithfulness to Him. My prayer is that as we stand together in this battle, we can finish well.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Well, was that a treat or not? I mean, I enjoy talking to him so much. And I want to say to all of you, I just highly commend Gary's messages, and they're so easy. He's got a great social media team, and so his messages are easily accessible if you just Google or search, whatever search you use for Gary Hamrick. It's a Cornerstone Chapel in Leesburg, Virginia. It's close, you know, pretty close to D.C., so he has a lot of people that I know, actually, that are staffers and in conservative organizations attend his church. It's a powerhouse because, you know, he's got the ear of people that are making decisions in government. And so that makes his role really important. And he takes it seriously. His messages on Israel, his messages on Revelation are just wonderful. Great series on that I recommend to you. So I hope you enjoyed my conversation with him. You know, this is Sandy Rios, and you know you can call us at 662-821-2040. Or you can go to sandy@afr.net and write us, actually, an old-fashioned email. Love that, too. You can find us on social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Telegram. We're on Telegram now, and Truth Social. You can find us on any podcast platform, Spotify or Apple or Amazon or wherever you like to listen. And, of course, you can go to afr.net. American Family Radio is home base for us. You can listen there. And you can also go to sandyrios.com if you want to do it the easy way and listen every day. We usually do three shows a week. But sometimes I'm going to be posting a few more in the upcoming days because I have so many backlogged from our time in Texas. I got so many great interviews at the Texas Film Festival. We'll be interspersing those. And I just at Pray Vote Stand in Washington, D.C., I got 10 more interviews, and they're great. You know, they're just wonderful. So we're going to be bringing you a lot of thick programming in the next few days. So I hope that you'll stay tuned. Well, I want to thank our sponsors. Timothy Plan is where you put your money, where your values are, and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.